Hello, welcome once again to Leto's Law. I'm Steve Leto. This is a brand new case from Michigan. Now, this does not mean that it applies in any other state, but it does apply in Michigan. But it's interesting because a lot of the reasoning that happens in this case might help you in another state. We'll see, you know. So here's the situation. Like I said, brand new case. It was actually filed, the opinion was filed by the Michigan Supreme Court on April 22nd, literally 2 days ago. State of Michigan, people of the state of Michigan versus Larry Mead, M-E-A-D. And this is an important case regarding the rights of a passenger in an automobile. I've done videos on this before. And, you know, this is one of those things that's always being refined by the U.S. Supreme Court. And now we've got a revision by the Michigan Supreme Court. And this is actually a sad story because this guy spent 2 years in prison. And this opinion here says that he shouldn't have. So the defendant, Larry Mead, was a passenger in a car when the police pulled the car over, ordered him out, and searched his backpack. He thinks the search was unconstitutional, and a straightforward application of a well-settled Fourth Amendment jurisprudence complicated by an order of the Michigan Supreme Court says that he's right. Okay, and the Supreme Court's actually kind of admitting here they screwed up, but we'll explain that. There's a case called People versus LaBelle that came down in 2007, so that's more than a decade ago. And in that case, they had ruled on a backpack in a car. So you'd think, wow, backpack, car, same set of facts. Shouldn't you get the same result? And the Court of Appeals says, or excuse me, the Supreme Court actually says, turns out we were wrong there too. Very rarely do they ever do that. But they say explicitly right here, we overrule LaBelle. Conclude that the defendant had a legitimate expectation of privacy in his backpack and hold that the warrantless search of the defendant's backpack was unreasonable because the driver lacked the authority to consent to the search. So I'll explain to you how this happened. In May of 2014, a Jackson police officer named Richard Burkhart pulled over Rachel Taylor because she's driving with an expired plate. As he approached the car to ask for Taylor's license and registration, Burkhart observed the defendant in the passenger seat clutching a black backpack on his lap. Burkhart asked for ID from both and determined through a database search that neither had outstanding warrants. Although Taylor had admitted that she did not have a valid driver's license, Burkhart decided he would not arrest her but would try to get her permission to search the car. So he pulls a car over with an expired registration being driven by somebody without a driver's license, and he says, I wasn't going to write any tickets. I'm more interested in what's in that guy's backpack. So Burkhart asked Taylor, the driver, to get out of the car, and he got her out of the defendant's earshot and had a brief conversation with her where he learned that Taylor had just met the man. They were traveling the same direction, and she had agreed to drop the defendant off on her way. Then the officer obtained her consent to search her and the vehicle. So once Burkhart had obtained Taylor's consent to search, he returned to the car and asked the defendant to get out. The defendant left his backpack on the passenger floorboard before stepping outside. Now, there is a dispute about this because defendant claimed that the officer told him to leave the backpack in the car. The officer did not recall doing so. He permitted Burkhart to frisk him for narcotics and weapons. Burkhart also asked the defendant how he knew Taylor, and he confirmed that they had just met and they were going the same way, so she offered him a ride in her unregistered car with no driver's license on her or in her name. The officer requested that the defendant step away from the vehicle, and he then began to search the passenger side. He opened up the defendant's backpack and inside found a digital scale, 5 prescription pills, 9.8 grams of marijuana, and 4.03 grams of methamphetamine. The defendant acknowledged the backpack was his, and he was arrested. He was charged as a fourth offense habitual offender with possession of methamphetamine, which is apparently a crime. Officer Burkhart testified at the defendant's preliminary exam that Taylor did not give explicit consent to search the backpack, but only the vehicle, and that he did not separately ask the defendant if he could search the backpack. Burkhart also testified that he believed, but did not confirm, that the backpack belonged to the defendant because it was in his lap when he pulled the car over. The defendant was bound over for trial, and in the circuit court, he moved to suppress the evidence from the backpack as fruit of an illegal search. The trial court denied that motion, citing the Supreme Court of Michigan's opinion in the case of People versus LaBelle. Okay, we talked about that. That's the case where they now say, oops, we screwed up. We're going to reverse that. The defendant was convicted by a jury and sentenced to serve 2 to 10 years in prison. And as of the writing of this opinion, he had spent 2 of those years in prison. The defendant appealed, and a unanimous panel of the Court of Appeals affirmed, holding the trial court properly denied defendant's motion to suppress the evidence because the LaBelle order held that the defendant lacked standing to contest the search of the backpack after the driver consented to the search of the car. Okay, so you got that. The driver owns the car. The driver was driving the car. The police pull the driver over in the car, and there's a passenger in the car with a backpack. When the driver gets out of the car, the driver says to the police, yes, you may search the car. The question then is that permission given by the driver of the car enough to search the contents of the backpack, which we pretty much know don't belong to the driver, but they belong to the passenger? I hope this hand stuff has helped you. It helped me. The defendant sought leave to appeal in this court, and instead of granting leave to appeal, they vacated the Court of Appeals decision and sent it back down with instructions to see if the case made much sense in light of a bunch of other cases that they sent back down. But on remand, the Court of Appeals again affirmed the conviction and sentence, holding that the defendant's case could not be distinguished from the case called LaBelle. Okay? And they went forward from that. So the defendant again sought leave to appeal in the Michigan Supreme Court, and they ordered oral argument on the application, and they laid out the issues that they wanted the parties to brief and argue and so on. So here's the court writing now in this opinion. To resolve this case, we must determine whether the challenged search infringed an interest the Fourth Amendment was designed to protect. And if so, whether the search complied with the Fourth Amendment. But we cannot address those questions without first ironing out a wrinkle in our jurisprudence. Our order in People versus LaBelle. In LaBelle, we held that passengers categorically lack standing to challenge a search of the vehicle in which they're traveling. We also held that the search of LaBelle's backpack, and LaBelle was the passenger, was valid because the officer had authority to search the passenger compartment, and authority to search the entire passenger compartment of the vehicle includes any unlocked containers therein, including the backpack in this case. In so holding, LaBelle announced 2 black and white rules in an area of the law full of shades of gray. The Fourth Amendment demands nothing more or less than reasonableness, and reasonableness does not lend itself to bright line rules. That's their way of saying we're going to change the ruling on this and change the law. Now, they cite the Fourth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, but also the Michigan 1963 Constitution, which basically says the same thing. Protections have been construed as coextensive. It protects against unreasonable searches and seizures. To invoke the Fourth Amendment's protections, a defendant must first establish that he had a legitimate expectation of privacy in the area searched. Moreover, the expectation of privacy must be one that society is prepared to recognize as reasonable. Courts must consider the totality of the circumstances in determining whether a defendant had a legitimate expectation of privacy in the area searched. In the usual case, a passenger will not have a legitimate expectation of privacy in someone else's car, such as a passenger would not normally have a legitimate expectation of privacy in areas like the glove compartment or the trunk of the car. Okay? In short, however, the usual case is not every case, and normally does not mean never. This is them setting you up to let you know that they're about to actually change their minds. Thus, we overrule LaBelle's holding that because the stop of the vehicle was legal, the defendant, a passenger, lacked standing to challenge the subsequent search of the vehicle. In its place, we reaffirm that a person, whether he or she is a passenger in a vehicle, or a pedestrian, or a homeowner, or a hotel guest, may challenge an alleged Fourth Amendment violation if he or she can show under the totality of the circumstances that he or she had a legitimate expectation of privacy in the area searched, and that the expectation of privacy was one that society is prepared to recognize as reasonable. Okay? So applying that standard here, we conclude that the defendant had a legitimate expectation of privacy in his backpack. To begin with, This case differs from the previous ones in one important way. The defendant challenged the search of a personal effect, which is his backpack. The Fourth Amendment specifically guarantees the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects. And they italicized effects. And the record establishes that the defendant asserted a clear possessory interest in his backpack because the cop even said, quote, he was clutching it in his lap, okay? He's hanging on to this thing. It had a digital scale and a bunch of drugs in it. It's valuable. Burkhart saw the defendant with a black backpack sitting in his lap that he kind of had his arms around. That's his testimony. And Burkhart believed that the backpack belonged to the defendant because of the way the defendant was holding it. One who owns or lawfully possesses or controls property will in all likelihood have a legitimate expectation of privacy by virtue of the right to exclude. We've talked about this before. When you own something, it gives you certain rights. When someone else owns something, it gives them certain rights. And when I own something and I have rights in something, you don't have the rights in something I own, and vice versa. And so that's the whole point, is I have the right to exclude you from my house if I own a house. I can exclude you from my property if I own property. And I can exclude you from using, utilizing, touching, or messing with something of mine if I want to, because it's mine. That's the whole point of ownership of something. So it's extremely important. We're talking about property rights here. So a passenger's personal property is not subsumed by the vehicle that carries it for Fourth Amendment purposes. And they cite a bunch of cases on this, but a person can get in a car without leaving his Fourth Amendment rights at the curb. Thus, although the defendant had no legitimate expectation of privacy in the interior of the vehicle, he had a legitimate expectation of privacy in his backpack. And we believe that society is willing to recognize that as reasonable. We reverse the Court of Appeals. The defendant may challenge the search of his backpack on Fourth Amendment grounds. And now they are talking about the consent as being an issue, because they're saying, well, there was consent by somebody. Doesn't that somehow make this all okay? Because the search of the defendant's backpack infringed an interest of the defendant, which the Fourth Amendment was designed to protect, we must decide whether the search was lawful. The defendant thinks not, but the prosecution believes that the driver's consent to search the car authorized the officer to search the defendant's backpack. You can see by the way this is written which way they're going with this one. The Fourth Amendment proscribes only unreasonable searches, and searches based on consent can be reasonable. So unless a defendant can identify a flaw in the grant of consent that renders the search unreasonable, consensual searches would be valid. There are three ways a court may find that a consent search was unreasonable. One, that consent wasn't voluntary. The consent giver lacked authority. Or the scope of the search exceeded the consent. It is the prosecution's burden to prove that the consent was freely and voluntarily given. Likewise, an otherwise valid consensual search might be unreasonable if the officers exceeded the scope of the valid consent. And a search is not valid if police obtained permission to search from a third party who lacked the actual or apparent authority to give consent. Taylor's consent to search the car was voluntary. Only the latter two issues are in dispute. Whether an objectively reasonable officer would conclude that Taylor had authority over the defendant's backpack, and whether the defendant's backpack was within the scope of her consent to search her car. An officer must obtain consent to search from someone who has the authority to give it. Generally, that means either the property's owner or a third party who shares common authority over the property. The Supreme Court's addressed this, and the defendant in previous cases, for instance, they talk about people sharing apartments, for instance, and so on. And so the court agreed in those cases that the prosecution could not establish that Fisher had common authority over the premises, talking about somebody who'd been kicked out of an apartment and came back and so on. But that's a whole different thing. So what we're talking about here is, they talk about the case of LaBelle. LaBelle was the previous case where they said, hey, look, somebody consents to let the police search a car. If there's a backpack and they're owned by somebody else, the consent will cover that. Well, now they have to go back and explain that. In LaBelle, we held that the search of the backpack was valid because the officer had the authority to search the car and authority to search the entire passenger compartment includes any unlocked containers located therein, including the backpack. We presumably intended the quoted language to apply only to searches incident to arrest. For one, that was, in fact, the legal standard for search incident to arrest when we issued LaBelle. We could not have imposed a bright-line rule like that for consent searches, even if we wished, because the consenting party defines the scope of the consent. But our order was not a model of clarity. So it is understandable that the trial court applied this rule to the consent search here. In any event, our LaBelle holding is now a dead letter in both contexts. And they're saying that that has to do with some other cases that have come down. And if we intended to graft those other standards onto consent searches, we overrule that. And if we intended, reaffirm that an officer must obtain consent from somebody with the actual or apparent authority to give it, that the scope of any consent search is defined by the consenting party, and that the standard for measuring the scope of a suspect's consent under the Fourth Amendment is that of objective reasonableness. With these principles understood, we now approach the search in this case. An objectively reasonable officer would not have believed that Taylor had actual or apparent authority over defendant's backpack. The officer testified that he believed the backpack belonged to the other guy. No evidence suggested that she had mutual use of the backpack, and a backpack is generally used to transport personal items, which suggests individual ownership. And as we've already pointed out, these two didn't know each other for very long. The odds that her stuff was in that backpack, nil. Given this brief relationship, a reasonable officer could not conclude that Taylor had mutual use of the backpack. Taylor was like a rideshare driver who has only short-term contact with passengers. An objectively reasonable officer would not believe that an Uber driver could consent to the search of his passenger's purse, for example. And since Taylor didn't have the apparent authority to consent to the search of the backpack, the scope of her consent is moot. By definition, the scope of a person's consent cannot exceed her authority given that consent. So because Taylor did not have apparent common authority over the backpack, the search of the backpack was not based on valid consent and is per se unreasonable unless another exception to the warrant requirement applies. Officer Burkhart conceded that he did not have probable cause to search or reasonable suspicion that the defendant or Taylor was armed. And we agree with the Court of Appeals that none of the other exceptions to the warrant requirement has been satisfied. We therefore hold that the warrantless search of the defendant's backpack was unreasonable and violated his Fourth Amendment rights. For these reasons, one, we overrule the LaBelle case, and two, hold that the search of the defendant's backpack violated the Fourth Amendment. Therefore, we reverse, send it back down, vacate the trial court, and remand to the trial court for further proceedings, not inconsistent with his opinion. We do not retain jurisdiction. And I'm here to tell you that Michigan has got 7 Supreme Court justices, one of whom did not participate in the disposition of this case, and the other 6 all signed on to this opinion. So again, this is the law in Michigan, and it looks like decent reasoning. So there might be similar laws where you are. The law might evolve this way where you are, but you might want to check. But generally speaking, at least in Michigan, if you're the passenger in a car that gets pulled over by the police and they ask the driver, can we search the car? The driver can consent, give the consent to the police to search the car, but not to search you, nor to search your stuff. It's a question of how well-defined your stuff is. If it's in a backpack, very, very well-defined. If it's at your feet, loose on the floor, gray area. But again, this is interesting and good case law. It's sad the guy spent 2 years in prison, but you know, hopefully he'll get out on this. But that's the most recent case law from the state of Michigan on the rights of passengers in cars that are pulled over by the police. Questions or comments, put them below. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.